But next to Marcel's, World Cup, Champions League with Milan, they weren't that hot. So, I'm telling them all about the travel I've been doing with my family, Australia, Vegas. It's all fairly quiet. A muted response. Then they go to Marcel. What have you been doing? Fucking hell. I thought it was the Pope I was listening to. Oh, I've been building schools. I've been working on projects in Africa for the kids. Because I am one of you. The roof came off. It carried on for about another hour. The night was over, and we were walking off the stage. I'd only known Marcel 24 hours, but I knew him well enough to say, you fecker. Thanks for that. What? I'm on about Vegas and Sydney and fucking Bondi Beach with my speedos on, and you're building schools with your bare hands. He says, Rye, you gotta play the game. He was laughing his head off. The next morning, we were going north to Ibadan. There was a helicopter for us. Marcel said, I'm not getting on. Flying's not for me. Not in a helicopter. So, a minibus was organised. I'm a team player, so I got in. 3 or 4 hours in the minibus, and Marcel never said a word. It was all emails and the internet. We got to the hotel about 3 hours after the helicopter. We do the gig. The first question, what have we been doing since we finished playing football? So I say, I've been doing a bit of charity work, and I mentioned the Irish guide dogs, and they get one off my chest straight away. They get the look from Marcel. That's better. We were flying back to Lagos the next morning, down to the hotel reception, back outside, and Marcel got into the helicopter. We were back in Lagos in half an hour. We landed in Heathrow. I was due to get a connecting flight to Manchester. But the screening machine at security started making noises as my bag went through. There was some sort of explosive residue on the handle of my bag. It must have been on the hands of one of the security lads who'd been carrying my bag in Nigeria. They were ex-SAS. Wherever we went, they'd been with us. They followed us everywhere. I mentioned my connecting flight. The Heathrow lads looked at me. That is the least of your worries. It's important that we trace it. But I've been to Nigeria. Oh, well, we'll put the bag through again. But if it comes up again, you're going nowhere. It was fine the second time through, and off I went. Then I did a signing session with some other ex-players at the NEC Arena in Birmingham. People came to get our autographs. I was sitting at a long table with other players. I remember looking at people like Dennis Law and thinking, you shouldn't be here. You're better than this. Then I was looking at others and thinking, I can see why you're here. Because it was a good earner. The money wasn't bad. And a lot of these men played their football before the big money came in. But people were paying for the autographs in front of us. A five or a signature or something. I don't think I've ever been as embarrassed in my life. I could almost hear them. I'll pay for his, but I'll not pay for his. It wasn't for me. I was cringing. I couldn't wait to get out. I'd have paid double the money to escape. I played a few charity celebrity games. I was surprised that there was an appearance fee for a charity gig. I passed my fees on. We played one at Old Trafford for UNICEF. The rest of the world v some pop bands. And I played one up at Celtic. Ex-players v somebody. But it felt awful. Is this what it's come to? I just didn't want to end up playing football with fucking JLS. That was never my master plan. To get your boots on, and you're overweight. You get injured. You embarrass yourself. What am I doing? I didn't like what I was becoming. I don't begrudge other men their decisions. If they want to go and play in a Legends match in India for 50 grand, I can understand it completely. But I didn't want to do it. But I'll try things. I'd rather regret the things I did than the things I didn't do. I did newspaper columns for a while, for The Sun. Again, I was being told it's easy money. I gave it a go, but I ran out of steam. And I hated it. Every Friday or Saturday, I'll be down the phone to a journalist, giving my verdict and everything. There has to come a point when you honestly say, I've no opinion on that. But that's not what makes newspaper columns. I said it once in an interview. I was asked about something to do with Manchester United, and I said, I've no opinion on that. I think the headline was, Shock, Keane has no opinion on something. I knew something would come up. Something would fall into place. Every time I doubted in the past, when I was playing for Cove, I'd never make it. Something happened. Forrest came looking for me. Then I went to United. I know, that can stop. Things falling into place. When I've had my doubts, they've been a motivation. I never felt low. I think there's a difference between low and down. I sometimes felt down. But I always thought that something would happen. I have a few quid in the bank. There's financial security. And I know that keeps a lot of the anxiety away. But falling back on security, doing nothing, I didn't want that. It's not necessarily about the money. It's the mind. I'd done one match before when I was still a player. It was one of the United-Arsenal games, when I was injured. So I was the guest, on Sky. I didn't enjoy it. It didn't seem right. I was still a player. I couldn't really say anything. But now it was different. I was out of a job. And the League Managers Association like to get you out there, to keep you visible. Visibility is the word they use. It had been 4 or 5 months since Ipswich. It was the first time I'd felt a bit unemployed. I didn't like it. The other times, after retiring from football, after Sunderland, I'd felt that I was between jobs. I was sitting in my kitchen. My wife was out and the kids were at school. The phone rang. It was Michael. ITV wanted to know if I fancied doing the Champions League final. It was United against Barcelona at Wembley, and I didn't have a ticket. I thought to myself, well, I could do a going to the game. It wasn't out of the blue. ITV had been in touch before, but it was their deadline day, the Wednesday before the final. I had to let Michael know in the next 15 minutes. Usually, when Michael rang with some request or job offer, I'd nearly always say, let me think about it. He'd laugh and go, you're not going to do it. I'll just tell them. But I'd read my horoscope that day. It had said something like, you can't keep saying no to people. So I said, I'll do it. I wanted a ticket. As United's captain and as a manager, I've been used to talking in front of a camera. But the last time I'd analysed a match, it had been United's game against Middlesbrough for MUTV, which had played its part in getting me out the door. The other guests were Gareth Southgate, he was the regular, and Harry Redknapp. Harry had managed Tottenham in the Champions League that year. Adrian Childs was the presenter. Andy Townsend was there too. I knew Andy. I was quite relaxed about it, considering it was the Champions League final, and I was new to it. But I played against Barcelona, and I played for United. I played at Wembley, so I was comfortable. And the other people, Gareth, Adrian, the ITV people, gave me a helping hand. And Harry's personality helped. It was all very relaxed, especially when you remember what a big event it was for ITV. My main point was that I thought United playing 4-4-2 would be overrun in midfield by Barcelona. Giggs and Carrick were in the middle of the park. They were good players, but they wouldn't be great at getting the ball back for you when you didn't have it. I kept what I said simple, and they called it right. They got very little possession. But it didn't need an expert to predict that. ITV took a chance, throwing me in, but I'd like to think they were confident enough that I'd know what I was talking about. I mightn't have the TV head on, but I'd have the football head on. A couple of months later, into the new season, 2011-12, I was asked if I'd do a few more games. I played it by ear, match by match. I trusted ITV, but I didn't want to sign a contract. It was out of work for more than 2 years, so I just continued to do it. I got used to it. I got used to the travel, the studios, talking at the pitch sides and working with other people, the other pundits and production people. I enjoyed the travel. I liked going to Munich. I liked Madrid and Barcelona. I could have a wonder if there was no English teams playing, because I wouldn't have to deal with the fans. We were in Athens to cover United's game against Olympiacos, and a group of us went to have a look at the Acropolis. When I was a player, I wouldn't have done that. I enjoyed the trips to London on the train. I enjoyed walking around London. My day in London was a bit of a treat for myself. Getting to and from the stadiums could be a problem because of the traffic. I started getting a motorbike to the games, which I really enjoyed. I'd be couriered on the back of the bike from the station or the hotel to Wembley or Stamford Bridge. I enjoyed the routine, getting to the games, getting home. I liked ITV, the people I was working with. The travelling wasn't always great. We did City's away game against Villarreal. I got dog's abuse from some of the City fans, and I was thinking, do I need this? But then, we'd be covering a United game and Lee Dixon would be getting loads of stick from the United fans, and I'd say, ah, you have to deal with it. I liked when United or City were playing at home, because they were 2 minutes from my house. The pay was the same for working at the Etihad as it was for going to Munich. A game in Munich was 3 days away. A game in Manchester was less than one. A few occasions I didn't enjoy it. I just wasn't in the mood for it. At a game I was watching, no goals, no action, wasn't worth the travel. I'd be away and be missing a family occasion, a birthday or something, and I'd think, this isn't for me. I'd tell the producer, Tony Pastor, or later, Mark DeMuth, I was finished with it. I'd had enough. I'd stop doing it for a while. Then I'd be watching a game and I'd think, maybe I could have added to that. A couple of weeks later, they get in touch. Are you sure you don't want to do this game? I'd go, ah, go on then. I'd go back, and the lads would go, we thought you'd retired. And I'd go, I'm only doing it for a few more games, lads. My jobs as a manager had ended badly. They always do. This time, I was dictating the terms. A bit. It even gave me something to complain about, if that makes sense. The ex-players who've fallen in hard times are the ones who ended up with nothing to do. Football had been good to me, so, although I'll always argue for a good deal, it wasn't about making money. It was about getting out of the house. There'd be homework to do before a match. I'd have to look at the opposition, whoever was playing against an English team. I'd be sent DVDs and information on the players. You learnt you didn't want too much information because you were only on air for short spells, before the game, at half-time and after. I was learning the tricks of the trade. It was work, but I don't like the label pundit. I don't like being labelled generally, although I never minded being called a footballer, because I loved being a footballer. It wasn't like going down the pit for 10 hours, but I do think the TV work serves a purpose. It creates argument, even if it's about different styles of punditry. There's a skill to it. It's a balancing act. You want to point out something that someone who hasn't played mightn't have spotted, but you don't want to talk down to people. You want to educate them a little bit and entertain them. If I'm eating something in a restaurant, I don't necessarily want to know everything that's going on in the kitchen, but a glimpse is interesting. The balance is important. The more I speak, the more rubbish I talk, so I kept it short. The hours that they get to speak on Sky or RTE would kill me. I'd end up overanalyzing everything. I was learning the boundaries, the way TV worked. I'd had to remind myself that the reason for a player's movement or a pass wasn't obvious to everybody. That's why he's ran in there. Adrian would go, well, I don't know that. And I'd go, well, he's ran in there to move him, or it's the pace of the pass. I tried not to state the obvious. and I also tried not to be too clever. I'm guessing that I had the job because he says it as it is, and because of my playing experience, and possibly because I brought a bit of unpredictability. People could say, oh, he's right, or, oh, he's a prick. And getting behind the clichés. Last year's one was parking the bus. It was a new phrase, but it's been a tactic for years. Liverpool did it in the 80s. The new phrase was a gimmick, like the arrows on the screen. All that TV time needs filling. Ryan Clough said, that's the problem with football. There's too much tactics. My job was to keep it simple. The problem for me was that the TV work felt like failure, because I failed at management at Ipswich. I'm referring only to myself, not to the lads who've wanted to work in the media. I was a reluctant pundit. That attitude helped the quality of my commentary, I think. I tried to talk as I played, very simply. I sometimes saw Adrian looking at me, letting me know we need more. And I was, you're not getting more. I said my bit. At some stage, I would like a life with a bit of anonymity. And I had to accept that the longer I did the TV work, the less likely that was to happen. I'd be asked, what's happening at United? And I'd feel another slice of me gone. I just sold something. It wouldn't mean growing a beard and moving to Timbuktu, but it would be nice to go for a while without being asked, what do you think of Van Gaal, or what do you think of David Moyes? You can feel a bit trapped by football, although there are worse places to be trapped. There came a point when I asked myself, is this really, really what I want to do? And the answer was no. For the Champions League final between Real and Atletico in May 2014, there wasn't too much homework because I'd seen quite a bit of both teams during the season. I'd been sent DVDs and the latest injury news. I kept an eye on articles and newspapers for snippets that might have been useful. If it was a team I didn't know as well, say Schalke, I'd have to do more preparation. In 2012-13, I was covering a game with Paris Saint-Germain and I thought, I'm not up to date here, so I had to do a bit more homework. I'd watch at least one full game, preferably live, if possible. If it was, say, Chelsea or United, the familiarity was relaxing. I'd have a feel for the grounds. I'd play there. I'd seen the teams regularly. Because it was the final, we were on air 45 minutes before the kickoff. I didn't like being on air too long. I understand why it's done. It's the final. There are the commercials. But it was particularly difficult before a match. It was different at half-time or after the match, when there'd be something to get into. But before the game, what do you think might happen? Who do you think is the danger man, Bale or Ronaldo? Where can they win the game? We had to give our expert opinion, but I was more comfortable talking about something that we'd actually seen, not something that we might see. Although, I like gambling a bit, putting my neck out. Well, this is how I think it'll pan out. I didn't enjoy the Champions League final. I felt distracted. I felt I shouldn't have been there. I should have been with the Irish squad in Dublin. We were playing a friendly against Turkey the day after. I'd got a job in football 6 months before. I was Martin O'Neill's assistant, and it only really started. I should have been in Dublin. At the end of the game, Real were lifting the trophy. Steven Gerrard was in the studio, the guest. Steven Gerrard, you know what it's like to lift this trophy. Yeah, it's great. Xabi Alonso, the Real player, had been suspended for the game. And Adrian asked me what that felt like, because I'd been suspended for the final in 1999. And Roy, what do you think Alonso's thinking? Because you didn't play in a Champions League final. He'd asked the question several times. We spoke about it after the semi-final, when Alonso had picked up his second yellow card. We spoke about it again before the final. Now I was being asked the question again. I just thought, not again. I felt like saying, Adrian, fuck you. I didn't say it, obviously, although it was after 10 o'clock, after the watershed, so I might have got away with it. I don't like it when companies become too comfortable with me. I don't like feeling owned. It tightens the chest. If I'm to be an employee, I want it to be for a club or a football organisation, not in media. After the game, the producer, Mark, a good lad, said, "Everything all right?" And I said, "No, Mark. I'm finished with TV. Forget about the World Cup. I'm not going." He said, "Are you sure now?" I said, "Yeah. My heart's not in it." When I'd worked on the FA Cup final the week before, I hadn't felt comfortable. I was a pundit. But I was also Ireland's assistant manager now, and there were Irish lads playing in the game for Hull. I'd be coaching them a few days later. I could see myself working in TV again sometime in the future, but not while I was in a football job, working with a team. I just thought, no, it's not for me. It had been on my mind, and I was happy when I made the decision. It was like when I rang Gordon Strachan to tell him that I wouldn't be playing again. It was a weight off the shoulders. It meant I wouldn't be going to the World Cup, but I couldn't see myself over there anyway. I'd done 2 or 3 years, and the decision felt great. I know that punditry is a huge part of the football life, but I didn't want to do it any more. I just felt it was sucking my spirit. There was once we were at Juventus in Turin. They were playing Chelsea. We were standing just at the corner flag. Adrian was next to me. He goes, "This is great, isn't it?" He's a proper football fan. I went, "I used to play in these games, Adrian." I wasn't being cocky. He looked at me and said, "Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. It's about justification and what you stand for. When I was at United, I was getting paid good money, but I could go, 'Yeah, but I'm giving it back to you.' I didn't feel that way with this work. It's an easy gig. I don't like easy gigs." When I heard, "I liked your commentary last night," I knew I was only talking bullshit like the rest of them. Hopefully, my bullshit was a bit better. I wanted to do something that excited me. TV work didn't excite me. What I really enjoyed was the company. If we were covering an away game, we'd travel the day before and go for something to eat and a few drinks. I liked Adrian Childs and Lee Dixon and Gareth Southgate when he was doing it, and Martin O'Neill. It was like a little team. Sometimes Andy Townsend joined us, or Clive Tilsley, the commentator. There'd be plenty of football banter. And the people you don't see on the screen, the sound technicians, producers, I'd get on well with them too. I was on a circuit. I'd travel to different cities and stadiums around Europe. I'd bump into the same people, doing what I did. I met and travelled with Jan Molby. He works for Danish TV, but he lives in England. I enjoyed his company. It was good crack. Jan played for Liverpool, and some United fans saw us together. One of them said, "Why the fuck are you talking to him?" It felt like saying, "I speak to who I fucking want to. He played for Liverpool in the 80s. I like meeting people. Old players. Jan, Ray Houghton, Patrick Vieira, Kevin Kilbane. I bumped into Peter Schmeichel in a hotel in London. I was having my porridge and he said, "Do you mind if I join you?" We did a fight once, and now we were having breakfast and a bit of banter together. It was nice. We never mentioned the fight. The fight was that time a different environment. Patrick Vieira and myself fought in the tunnel, and now I like meeting Patrick. I got sent off for stamping on Gareth Southgate. I get on well with Gareth now. We keep in touch. I liked meeting Ian Wright, even though we'd been in opposing sides. I kicked Robert Pires, and he laughs about it now. I ended up thinking, what good guys these are. I wouldn't have allowed myself to see that as a player. I think the TV job brought me out of my shell a bit. I met Peter Reid. I used to kick fuck out of Peter Reid, in a respectful way. I remember booting him when he was at City. I don't remember him kicking me, but he must have. Peter did one of the England international matches, and we stayed in the same hotel in Oslo. We went out for a walk and had lunch together. He was a player I'd admired when I was a kid, when he was in that Everton team with Adrian Heath and Kevin Sheedy. And there I was having lunch with him in Oslo. We were sitting there, and one of us said, "This is cool." And it was cool. 12. I loved the game of football. I got distracted, I think. I lost track of why I loved the game. I thought Martin O'Neill was a clear favourite for the Ireland job. I'd met him on a few occasions. We'd done some TV work together. We'd done a couple of Champions League matches away from home. And I just liked his company. And I'm hoping he might have liked mine a little bit. So when I thought, he's got a chance of getting the job, I also thought, maybe, just maybe, he might keep me in mind. I thought the job would suit Martin, in terms of his character and his experience, even his age. I thought the challenge was perfect for him. And before you know it, he rang me and said, "Do you fancy coming up for a chat?" And I thought, all right, interesting. I had a real enthusiasm about me then, because after my time at United, and especially at Ipswich, I'd lost a bit of love for the game, which I hate saying. Because for me, football is still the best game on the planet. Was I expecting it? Probably not. Was I shocked? Not shocked either. In football, you just never know what's around the corner. And I thought the Irish job, being Martin's assistant, was probably perfect for me. I just thought, to work with Martin, to go back with Ireland after all the turmoil, the roller coaster, and that roller coaster started when I was 14 or 15. Resentment is too strong a word, but from a very early age, I often wondered, Jesus, is this what the game is all about? So when Martin asked me, "Do you fancy coming on board?" we just thought, brilliant. I really did. I played a cool character, but I had a real buzz about myself. It gave me a bit of jai, and I lost that. I lost that in football, definitely. There are never good endings in football. I was no different from lots of other ex-players. I was doing the TV work, still going to watch matches, and enjoying them. But I had no purpose in my life. The Ireland job, and the possibility of working under Martin, I thought it would be great. And the fact that I wouldn't be manager. That appealed to me as much as anything. I could be hands-on with the players. I wouldn't have to go to FAI meetings. And I mean that in a nice way. I thought to myself, I can be under the radar a little bit. I could get back to giving something to the players. When you're a manager, you have to step back. And maybe I'd step back a bit too much. I was very comfortable with the prospect of being Martin's assistant. It might have been different if it had been someone else. Someone who hadn't done as much in the game. But this was Martin O'Neill. And particularly when I was a player, I'd never minded taking orders. I didn't need to be the number one. I'd enjoyed it. Picking my staff. And there's more money. There are definitely pluses to being the boss. But if I'd been asked during the years when I was out of the game, would I have been happy to work as somebody else's assistant? Two or three names would have sprung to mind, and Martin's would have been up there, at the top of the list. When Steve McLaren got the manager's job at Nottingham Forest in 2011, Steve doesn't know this, but at the back of my mind I thought, I wouldn't mind working with Steve. I'd known Steve at United, and he's a good coach. There were other people I'd come across, and almost subconsciously I'd be going, well, I think I'd like to work with him one day, maybe. I think I'd get on well with him. I think I would have liked working under David Moyes, and I would have had the opportunity if I'd signed for Everton after I left United. It's a gut feeling. I look at managers and they go, I like the way you come across. Then there are others, and they go, listen, that's a no-go. People have said, well, you're going to be assistant. What does that mean? That means I'll assist. Whatever he wants me to do, I won't complicate it. If Martin says to me, right, there's a player in China that could play for us, I'll go to China. If I'm asked and it's my responsibility, I'll do it. As for my relationship with the FAI, it's amazing how people forget that I came back and played for Ireland in 2004. I played for 2 years and got over all that awkwardness. And even then, I didn't find it that awkward. I just thought, I'm a player. I want to go back and play for my country. I didn't feel I was making up for Saipan or anything that had gone wrong there. I'd never regretted what I'd stood for. I just regretted that it had happened. I've never felt guilty about my part in it. I first met Martin when I went up to Glasgow to watch Celtic and Rangers. God knows the year, but Martin was Celtic's manager at the time. Celtic were playing at home, and I got invited to the director's lounge after the game. But our first conversation didn't get off to a good start, because the first thing Martin said to me was, I think you should have played in the World Cup. I said, why? And Martin said, well, you know. And I said, you weren't there. You don't know what went on. He said, I just wanted to say that. And I was back at him. You're entitled to your opinion, but, you know, there's a lot more to it than you think. That was our first conversation. But a few years later, I was managing Sunderland and Martin was at Aston Villa. We played against them twice at Villa and once at Sunderland before I lost my job. After the games, there'd be the usual get-together in his office or mine. There'd be Martin, his assistant, John Robertson, his staff. I liked his staff. There was a warmth about them. Then myself and Martin started working together with ITV. When we spoke about football, maybe it was down to the Cloughy thing, the fact that we both played under Brian Clough. We had the same ideas about the game and how it should be played. Martin might tell you different, but I enjoyed his company. There were strange quirks, little coincidences. Martin had been up at Celtic, and I'd had a spell playing there. Martin managed Sunderland. I'd managed Sunderland. He played under Brian Clough, and so did I. Martin's really into American football, and I like American football. I used to watch it on Channel 4 on a Sunday night when I was a kid. My grandmother used to go mad when I put it on. Martin's Irish, and I'm Irish. One of his daughters is called Alana, and my daughter is called Alana. Maybe that's why he gave me the job. Over the years, I've played different roles. Sometimes I don't know what role I'm playing. I'm a family man. I'm a Cork man. A TV pundit. I'm a critic. I was a player with a skinhead. I felt like an actor sometimes. Maybe we're all like that. I don't know. I was the manager, and I'd stand off from the players, but I wanted to be hands-on with them. But when I took this job, I said, I'm going to try to be myself. I'm going to work with the players. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm not going to get into the politics, like I did sometimes as a player. Enjoy working with the team. Don't get bogged down by anything else. At this moment in my life, being the number two suits me perfectly. I love the game of football. I got distracted, I think. I lost track of why I love the game. Saipan, my argument with Ferguson. They had nothing to do with the game, in a sense. I never fell out with 11v11. Being with the Ireland squad, I'm back in the zone. Being beaten by Turkey in Lansdowne in May was horrible, although it was a friendly. But it was great to wake up the next morning and get out on the grass with the players. I've not had that feeling in years. I was working with the lads who hadn't played the night before, going, we'll get this right. That feeling was there. And this meant this fucking happen. Being out in the grass, for me, is getting your gear on. I hadn't put on a pair of boots in a couple of years. Puma King, apparently they're from the 1950s because they're not green or orange, are odd. Getting the gear on, getting the balls out, getting the bibs, the cones, sitting in a position. One part of the training leads to another and to another. A warm-up, possession, 5v2 or 7v2, 6v6 in a big area, two-touch, one-touch, all part of the warm-up. Then into a bit of crossing and finishing, and ending with a game. There might be additional rules in the game, say, one-touch finishing. If you're working with a smaller number of players, say 4v4, you might have two-touch, with one-touch finish. A longer session might include tactical work, walking players through situations, and the shape of a session will depend on its time in the season. You won't be working on physical fitness at the end of the season, and when you last played a game, or when your next game is coming up, and the number of players you have. Then there's the manager's feel for the group, and what he thinks they need. A lot of ingredients go into a session. In the mornings, Martin discusses the session plan with myself and some other staff. He gets our thoughts and ideas, then decides in the session. That's fine, and I'm happy with it. The sessions are short, and our time with the players is short. And Martin has vast experience. But at club level, when there are a lot more training sessions, I like to get a feel for the group of players and make quick decisions myself. I like the responsibility. You're off tomorrow, lads. You trained really hard. When you're the assistant, you can't make those calls. But I think, ultimately, that it might eventually frustrate me. There's the fresh air, and getting wet, feeling cold. There's the satisfaction of a session going well, or the disappointment of it not going so well. There's the emotional side of being out in the grass, going back for your lunch thinking, I've done a bit of work. Enjoying the food, going, that was a good session, or that wasn't so good. He was good. He was bad. He's pissing me off. Drinking tea or coffee is a massive part of the job while you talk football. Video analysis and talk of old games and tournaments. Chatting to people who love the game as much as you do. Qualifying for Euro 2016 is going to be tough. Germany, Poland, Scotland, and there's Georgia too. But even that has given me an extra buzz. I haven't had that hunger for a long time. A lot of people decide not to go into international football because you don't get to work with the players that much, and that's fine. But I think that can actually be a hindrance, spending too much time in their company. Myself and Martin and Seamus McDonough, the goalkeeping coach, took our first two games, friendlies against Latvia and Poland, in November 2013. I really enjoyed it. And I think part of that was down to the fact they were only with the players for 8 or 9 days. Steve Walford and Steve Guppy have been added to the staff, and that's been a huge help to us. And they add to the football stories and banter. Steve Guppy played for Martin when Martin was managing Wickham, Leicester and Celtic, and worked as a coach for Martin at Sunderland. Steve Walford played with Martin at Norwich, then worked with him at Wickham, Norwich, Leicester, Celtic, Villa and Sunderland. At the end of the 13-14 season, we had 4 games against Turkey, Italy, Costa Rica and Portugal in Dublin, London and the USA. This time, we had the players for more than 2 weeks. It's very different from club football. When you're with players at a club, you start looking at what they're not good at. But when you have them for a short spell, it's, let's get it right for the game. At a club, you spend a lot of time talking about who you'd like to bring in and who you'd like to move. With an international squad, you're not thinking like that. The players you have are the players you have. And there's a plus to that. You have to look at the players positively. It's a bit like being a grandparent. You get the kids and you give them back. I'm working with Seamus McDonough and I watched Seamus playing for Ireland at Dalymount when I was a kid, 11 or 12. I came up from Cork for the match with my team, Rockmount. It was a Wednesday night. I was telling Seamus about it. Were you playing in that game, Seamus? Yes, I was. Ireland were playing Holland. It was Ruud Gullit's first international game. We lost 3-2. I slagged Seamus about it. You threw in a few that night, Seamus. We'd won the trip to Dublin because we'd won a tournament, the under-12s. It was called the Val O'Connor. We'd got to the final and the winners would win a trip to see the Ireland team. It was my dream to see Ireland play. We won 3-0. I got a hat-trick. I was going, I want to see that fucking match. But Seamus played in that game. And now I'm working with Seamus. It's brilliant. I bought my first ever single that day too in Dublin. Karma Chameleon by Culture Club. Niall Quinn made the point on TV recently. Dave Langan, who played for Ireland in the 70s and 80s, would have turned up with his leg hanging off and have said, "I'm fit." I think Niall was contrasting Dave's attitude to Stephen Ireland's and how things had changed. Playing for your country used to be the pinnacle of a player's career. Now it's playing in the Champions League. Maybe I got lost in that world. I need to remember that most of our players won't be playing in the Champions League. Playing for Ireland would be the pinnacle of their careers. I need to remind myself about going to Dollymount as a kid, and the bus, to see Ireland play. I'm watching the way Martin speaks to the players, the way he handles the staff. I'm not saying it's perfect, or that I'll try and copy it. I'm just going, "I like that, I like that. I'm not sure about that. I like that." I don't have to deliver the bad news. You're not playing. But I'm watching Martin do it. He has more knowledge than me. More experience to fall back on. Again, I'm not trying to copy him. I'm learning. Like I learned when I worked for Brian Clough and Alex Ferguson. Brian Clough gave me my chance in England. I have a thing in my makeup where there's that loyalty to people who I think have looked after me. Lads who might have given me a lift or picked me up at the airport. I might remember them for 20 or 30 years afterwards, like Tony Loughlin and Gary Charles at Forest. One of them took me for a game of snooker, just when you needed someone to dig you out. And Brian Clough dug me out by giving me a contract. I'd like to think I earned it. I wouldn't say a bad thing about Brian Clough. He was brilliant with me. A brilliant manager and a brilliant man. He met my family. He was always dead nice to them. There was once he took me to a charity do. He needed a player to go to the gig. And he dragged me along with him. I was very young and single. A lot of the other lads had families. At the end of the night, he gave me £50. A £50 note. I'm not sure I'd seen one before in my life. It was like one of your uncles giving you a few bob when he came to the house. There was something underneath it. I could identify a lot with him. He was hard on me. He hit me once, and I thought, "I know why you punched me." I got him. I just got him. He kept things simple. For everybody. I think there's a warmth in that, and a cleverness. There's a genius to keeping it simple. I worked under two great managers. And I put Brian Clough ahead of Alex Ferguson for a simple reason. What was the most important thing in my football career? Brian Clough signing me. That kick-started everything. Different managers, both brilliant. I think Brian Clough's warmth was genuine. I think with Alex Ferguson, it was pure business. Everton was business. If he was being nice, I thought, it's business this. He was driven and ruthless. That lack of warmth was his strength. United was a much bigger club than Forest. And his coldness made him successful. He had a different personality from Brian Clough, but his message was the same. I was never once confused by one of his team talks or his tactics or training sessions. I never once in all my years at United thought, "I don't know where you're going with that one." His management and his message to the players before matches was always fresh. I must have heard him talk before a match close to 500 times, and I always thought, yeah, that was good. I think that's amazing. I know Clough's warmth was business too. Forest were good to me, but they got me for £50,000, and I was younger. I was older at United, and I could see that it was a bigger business, and that the game was changing, and that Ferguson was driven. He had to be. We had massive success together. It was enjoyable, and it was great. As a manager, I'd like to take Clough's warmth and Ferguson's ruthlessness and put them in the mix, but also add my own traits. After the Turkey match in May, Martin had to go and face the media. I didn't. I sat in the dressing room with the players, eating chicken curry and rice, and going, "We'll get it right, lads." When I was a player, I shut doors on myself. Now, I don't have to. When you're working, you're visible. People see that you're working in a tracksuit on the grass and working with players. Maybe he's not the psycho. Football's a small world. Whether good or bad, people talk. Players go back to their clubs, and Martin's an intelligent man. Yet he brought me on board. He can't be that big a head case. The opportunity came to go to Aston Villa, to work with Paul Lambert. At Villa, I'm the number two, and it suits me at the moment. I can keep the Ireland job, Martin and Paul, the FAI in Villa are happy with that. My family doesn't have to move. It's back in the Premiership, with a club that I have a soft spot for. And I like the prospect of working with Paul Lambert. To be a good coach, you need to get your hours in. Working alongside Paul, day to day, watching games a close hand, can only help me. It will make me a better, more experienced coach. And I can bring that experience, and what I'm seeing every day, to the Ireland job. What will be, will be. I think the Ipswich experience will stand me in better stead than anything else. All the lessons I learnt. They're nearly there. Just remember, it's hard to win football matches. A big part of the Ireland job is going to matches, to see the Irish players. Martin will ring me, or I'll ring him. I'll go, "There's a game coming up next weekend on Sunday. I'll cover it. Is that okay?" And he'll go, "Right, you go to that one." Everton, Stoke, Hull, where a lot of the Irish lads are playing. It can be a bit of a gamble. I went to West Brom and Norwich last season, and Shane Long, this was before he moved to Hull, and Wes Houlihan, the men I'd gone to see, were both on the bench. But the time is never wasted. I went to another game at Hull. Again, most of the Irish lads were on the bench. Paul McShane, who's also at Hull, made the point, "Well, I hope you watched the warm-up." And I fucking did. I watched the players' body language and humour, the way they warm up before the game, or when they're on the bench. Then I'm looking at the team out on the pitch and I'm thinking, aren't you in that team? If they're on the bench, do they get warmed up as if they want to go on? You can tell with some subs, they just don't want to go on. They should be chomping at the bit. I try to watch the players in different surroundings, home and away, or against a team where you think they're likely to get beaten, to see how they carry themselves, and if they keep going. James McCarthy and Seamus Coleman have been doing really well at Everton. I saw them play at home to Stoke, a very comfortable 4-0 victory. The two of them strolled through the game. A couple of days later, they were at United. And I thought, now I'll watch them. So I went to Old Trafford, big setting, difficult fixture, and the two of them were excellent. I think it's important that when the squads of international matches are named, all the players, whether they're in or out, will be able to say, well, they have watched me. They might be disappointed, but at least they'll know we saw them play. We'll be keeping an eye on them all the time. I'm no one for writing many notes about players. I'll have a team sheet and I might jot down a word or two. But I don't do a match report or a scouting report. I'd end up missing the match. I'm there to look at one or two players. I'm not examining set pieces or team shape. I'm learning a lot more about football clubs. And I'm finding out the clubs I really like. When I was a player, I was very robotic. I'd go in and just do my business. I didn't care what club it was. I'm looking around now and I'm thinking, what good clubs? The more I go back to a club, I begin to develop a routine. Getting to Everton's quite easy, and Stoke, and Wigan's a doddle. For other games, I tend to leave the house earlier. I don't want to be turning up 10 minutes after kick-off. I need to be professional. I have to get a suit on. I have a role while I'm there. I'm the assistant manager of Ireland. I don't want to be turning up like I slept in a ditch. I generally travel alone, although it's nice to have a bit of company sometimes, especially at half time. Because when I'm on my own, I can see some people thinking, ah, I've got an open invite. Most people who come up couldn't be nicer, but sometimes people seem to think they're on a mission. Who are you here to watch? Have a guess, I say to myself. Some of the Irish lads, I answer. I've always been a bit wary, always ready for the bit of abuse, but it never happens. The smart comment, or something sarcastic, never. I had abuse thrown at me when I was a player and a manager, but that was from thousands of people, the opposition fans. It's part of the game, but not from individuals. No one going, hey, a wanker, or anything like that. But I'm ready for it. But I hate that about myself. In all the years I've been in football, and whatever I've done, people have shown me massive respect. They mightn't like me, or like the way I played, opposition fans anyway, but I never had anyone come up to me and go, oh, you, whatever. I just wish I was a bit more relaxed. Although, I still think I have to be on my guard. In the past, when I have relaxed and let people into my space, they let me down. I've had that experience. So I think I have to keep that guard up a little bit. But not to the extent that I have in the past. I went to Everton last season. They were playing Norwich. The lad beside me was chatting to me, and he was talking quite cleverly about the game. I was enjoying the conversation, and I thought, I'll ask him who he works for, because he was talking about players and the game. He knew his stuff. So I went, who do you work for? What club are you involved in? I'm Roy Hodgson's driver. I was laughing at myself. I'm glad I dropped my guard because I enjoyed his company. I think there's ego involved too when I go, I'll keep myself to myself. He was a nice bloke and, being Roy's driver, he probably saw more games than I did. Everton's another top club. The day Aidan McGeady signed for them from Spartak Moscow, I was thinking, great move for you, Aidan. Another Irish lad going to Everton. Brilliant. It's good for Ireland. He's got other Irish lads around him, and they've got a good manager. They can get into the Champions League in the next year or two, which can only be good for Ireland. Because the problem for Ireland is that most of the lads aren't playing at the top level. When I was a young player, the ambition was to play for one of the big teams. You wanted to get to the very top, the trophies and the financial rewards. Today, a lot of players can become very wealthy without reaching the very top. They might play for a mid-table club, or a club in the lower half of the Premiership, or even a Championship team, and still become multi-millionaires. I don't know if that drive, that hunger, is there to get to the very top. There's never been a time when loads of young Irish players have come through. It's always been one or two every couple of years. I just hope they still come through. Seamus Coleman and James McCarthy at Everton are young, but they're not teenagers. They've already been found. And they're the type of players we'll be hanging our hats on. Jeff Hendrick at Derby. I like the look of him. But senior players will always play a massive role. We're always looking for players, but we're not going to unearth 7 or 8 diamonds. And I think we can take encouragement from the fact that smaller countries did quite well in Brazil in the World Cup. Uruguay has a population of 3.5 million, smaller than Ireland's. But if we start calling ourselves a small country, we might be beaten before we start. We can look at our own football history. We've done it before. We have a nucleus of good young players. I've never been against players who weren't born in Ireland playing for the country. If they want to come on board and they qualify, then great, as long as they've a feel for it. I think in the past, there were 1 or 2 players who probably declared for Ireland as a career move. And I can understand that too. They did well for the country. But I look at some of them now and I wonder if they've been back to Ireland since. So I think the attitude should be, listen, if you're going to come on board, get a feel for it. Have a warmth for the country. But don't just do it as a pure career move. But then again, who am I to say? Love a country is a hard thing to measure. But if you see a player on the TV who played for Ireland singing God Save the Queen in a playoff final, you might just say, all right, maybe he's not really all that Irish. Matty Holland would be an example. For me, Matty is as English as David Beckham. He played for Ireland and he obviously has the roots. But he played for Ipswich in a playoff final in 2000 and he was singing God Save the Queen at the top of his voice. I don't think he could have sung it any louder. Some of the other Irish lads saw him too, so at the next couple of international matches we were going, turn that rebel music up a bit. I think it's important that lads plug into Ireland a little bit, and the ways of the country. And I think, generally speaking, they do. They don't have a choice, I suppose. I was at an FAI dinner recently and John Aldridge was the guest speaker. Aldo would be an example of a player born in England who gave as much to Ireland as any Irish-born player. There has to be that feeling and a warmth for the country. Often a manager gets the job and his first game is the next day. But our first Euro qualifier came almost a year after we were appointed. The friendly matches were important and we wanted to build a bit of momentum and get to know the players. But I was dying to get into qualifiers and to qualify and justify my role, try to win people's respect, work with the younger players, let them go out and enjoy it, and express themselves. I got a call. Would I go and have a chat with Dermot Desmond, Celtic's majority shareholder? I'd met him once before in 2005, when I was going to play for Celtic. I met him for a cup of tea. It was in the middle of an international week in Dublin. At the end of the chat, he said, "The job is yours." It was all pretty straightforward. There'd be one or two restrictions about staff. They'd already picked the man who'd be my assistant, and they were insisting on him. It didn't scare me off, although it did get me thinking. It wasn't an ideal start. But they're doubting me already. I came back to the same hotel and spoke to Martin. I told him I'd have to think about it. We had a game against Italy at Craven Cottage in London on the following Saturday. We were busy travelling to London from Dublin, getting the team ready. The fact that I'd spoken to Dermot Desmond had become public knowledge. It had to because Martin had a press conference, and a few things had been leaked, as usual. It didn't worry me too much. It was a friendly match. I didn't think it was going to upset the camp, although again, it wasn't ideal. But I was delighted. It was a massive compliment. Over the years, when chatting with people about football and Celtic, I'd always said, if you're offered a Celtic job, you don't turn it down. So now I was in a predicament, with myself, in a sense. And my good feeling was getting back to me. You're on your own with this one. I asked Paul Gilroy, the League Managers Association lawyer, to speak to Celtic, to discuss terms. Money hadn't been mentioned yet. I got in touch with Celtic's chief executive, Peter Lowell, and asked him to give me a ballpark figure before negotiations got going. He mentioned a figure and he said, but that's it. So, Paul Gilroy spoke to Celtic. He told me there was a lot of clauses in the contract that he wasn't happy with, and the figures were non-negotiable. I got my head around that, but it felt a bit too familiar. I've been down this road before, when I'd signed for Celtic as a player. They were playing the part. It's Celtic. You should almost go up there for nothing. I felt Celtic wanted me, but they weren't shown how much they wanted me. We played a game against Italy on Saturday. We drew 0-0. A good result. I had a message on my phone on Sunday from Dermot Desmond. They wanted a heads up by tomorrow, Monday. In the meantime, I flew back to Dublin. We had a few days off before heading to the USA to play friendlies against Costa Rica and Portugal. I'd left my car in Dublin, so I was getting the ferry back, from Dublin to Holyhead. I was by myself, and I booked a cabin, a bit of privacy. I thought about the Celtic offer. It wasn't rocking my boat. They weren't convincing me. Listen, you're the man for us. I got home to Manchester on Sunday night. I was tired. I went to Paul Gilroy's house. He lives 5 minutes from me. There were things I wasn't happy with in the contract. But I know if you examined every clause too carefully, you'd never sign anything. I rang Dermot Desmond on Monday and said, I'm really honoured you've offered me the job, but I want to stay with Martin. My decision wasn't influenced by other job offers or potential offers. I wasn't playing games. It was a straightforward decision. Had Celtic shown me enough in their negotiations?